that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning, out in the garden, get you ripe when you don't get a heart. When you plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer. All winter without them is a culinary bummer. I forget.
Well, you hear that song, friends, and so you know what it means. We are about to go in the garden. On the phones with Master Gardener Ed Bajarski, generously joining us from Juneau to answer our questions and just point us in the right direction while we've got our hands in the dirt. And let's see here. We do want to thank the Flower Farm for helping underwrite this program. They are out there at 6 Rory's Road every day but Wednesday, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. They offer delivery that's available in the evenings. And their phone number is 772-3464. They've got bouquets by the jar or by the subscription with dahlias, snaps, and more. Their phone number, 772-3464. Okay, and we'll get Master Gardener Ed Bajarski on the phone here. Do we have you, Ed?
I'm here. Really, I am.
Hey, all right. Welcome, and thanks for joining us.
Yeah, sitting in the shade in Juneau where it is cooking. I mean, and other good news, I was not hopeful, but I do have a couple of corn stalks, which are knee-high. So, for the 4th, which is a goal. Of course, last year it was navel-high on the 4th. So, a little different this year.
You're going to have to put it up on a chair. I don't know. It's finally feeling a little bit summerish around here too. Boy, oh boy, that was a sort of autumn June, but I think the gardens are going to be pretty happy for the next week, and before long people are going to have to be doing some watering.
Yeah, and that's something to keep track of too. Maybe not so much for the plants that are in the ground. Hopefully they're growing well. Hopefully they've got a good reservoir of organic matter holds moisture, but certainly the potted plants, definitely. The hanging baskets, definitely. Mm-hmm. The regular water, consistent water.
Right. Yep, keeping that consistent. That's a good necessary bit of maintenance as summer starts feeling kind of warm and sunny.
Hopefully it'll continue. So the other plants are growing well. The peas are shooting for the sky, and the potatoes are growing and needing to be hilled on a regular basis. At least I've got to get out there and hill probably one more time for mine, at least. And we're watching the garlic, too. We should be, it's garlicscape harvest time. Favorite, certainly one of the many favorite times of year.
Yes, that is exciting, right. What are one or two tips for people who are looking at their garlicscapes thinking, you know, they don't want to let this culinary opportunity escape?
Okay.
Boo. Yeah.
You did follow that, Oren. Good lead up. So the scapes on the hardneck garlic, which is what most of us in Southeast Alaska are likely planting, though we can grow some soft necks. Those braid well, but they don't produce scapes. So as they appear from out of the center of the stem between the leaves, we want to clip them off, cut them off gently. You can snap them off. They're usually pretty crisp to eat. And part of the reason we want to take them off, too, is to take away their energy draw from the, hopefully, big bulbs, which are starting to form underground.
Yes. Okay. Easy as that.
The best thing, of course, is they're edible. So we are, I'm sure you, if not me, and others, are out of our garlic from last year. So this is fresh green garlic. Lots of flavor. Terrific for chopping into salads, for stir-frying, for making pasta sauces, for making pesto. And, I mean, mixing some garlic scapes, chop that with all manner of stuff, from parsley to chickweed, dandelion greens, kale, Swiss chard greens, chop all that stuff up fine, add some olive oil and salt, and you are in business.
All right. Well, that sounds so good. But before we turn into a cooking show, we'll talk about growing and gardening. I want to put an opportunity out here for callers here to join us by phone if they have a pressing question here while we're kind of at the top of the program. 772-3808 is a number to call. Dial us up and float a gardening question to Master Gardener Ed Bajarski if there's something on your mind about your garden and you have a problem that needs some expert information to help solve. Feel free to call on in. You know, I did have one question from my own modest attempt at gardening, Ed. I was checking out one of my potato patches, and I was pretty mortified at the destruction of slugs just on one particular patch on my potatoes. And so I thought, okay, well, better keep a closer eye on this patch. But also, I kind of thought to myself, okay, well, this needs a good hilling anyway. Instead of using soil or anything like that, I went and grabbed some seaweed from the beach, and I'm kind of hoping that the saltiness of the seaweed is going to help with slugs. Is that wishful thinking, or is that maybe a good idea?
Not at all. No, that can very well be helpful. There is just enough. The worms are happy with seaweed. There'll be worms underneath your seaweed. But you are correct that a little bit of residual salt that's there should help in that regard. And again, of course, it's hard to find a lot of seaweed this time of year, but even if you can make kind of a border around a patch of particularly slug-attractive plants, that may be helpful also.
Okay, so if you're mixing in seaweed with dirt as you're hilling your potatoes, this is probably a good week for everybody to be out hilling potatoes because they've been growing a lot, yeah? So a border of seaweed if you don't have enough to hill the whole thing this round.
Yeah, so again, look at your potatoes too as far as, you know, they are telling you your plants speak to you maybe in ways that you just have to be observant and, you know, lean close to listen. But as they grow, of course, there also should be, if you got them in earlier than I did, I got a lot of mine were late in May, they're growing nicely, they are not showing any flower buds yet. But once they do start to flower, then they're also sending out the little side shoots from the plant above the roots, above the tuber that you planted to make the new potatoes on. Mm. So why this hilling is so important, so that there are more places for the new shoots to come out from between the leaves or from the leaf bases to make more potatoes.
Gotcha. So flowering on the potatoes is the sign that those rhizomes are going out?
Exactly. Yep, that's what it's all about. So again, if you have a good sized patch, and maybe 2 to 3 weeks after flowering, then you can actually sneak in and steal a few small potatoes out from underneath plants. Whether you pull a whole plant or whether you just literally, if your soil is loose enough that you can get your fingers in underneath there, you can feel them and carefully pull them off without disturbing the rest of the plant. And then we have some fresh new potatoes to hopefully go with some fresh peas and some finely chopped garlic steeps and or chives and other stuff. I'm sorry, we're getting back to the cooking part of the show, but that's what we're doing here, isn't that? That's the goal, is to have food to cook or to eat raw, I suppose.
No, yeah, that is a really good point, that there is so much good harvesting and eating in the garden right now. And gosh, you know, I had barely even thought about, just sneaking out some of the potatoes, even as they're just kind of starting to get ready. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, the nice little potatoes. I mean, they don't take, just briefly rinse them off and toss them in the boiling water, and doesn't take very long to cook them. So, and just don't overcook them, of course. So all the other stuff, again, let's just go back briefly to the garlic scapes, because we've got kind of a short, like a 2 to 3 week window for harvesting before they get tough. You know, the stems really, while they're still crisp and easily chopped, not so fibrous, they can be chopped fine, lightly sautéed, packed frozen in a little bit of olive oil or frozen water also. You know, you can put them in ice, make ice cubes with them. And something like that can be tossed into later on this winter. Use those in soups or making more pesto later. Some folks will pickle the garlic seeds. Again, there's recipes out there available to use them for also. So use them like you would green onions. Use lots of them.
Yeah, pickled garlic scapes. That does sound really good. Wow, nice.
Those can go on sandwiches as far as that goes, you know, once they're pickled. So there's lots of places, or as hors d'oeuvres with whatever you want.
So you want to get them while they're nice and tender, though, right? You don't want to leave them on too long, and then they just probably get a little tough.
Right. And I suppose those can even, for those folks who make their own martinis or other special drinks, you know, a tall drink, I suppose, with a tall, curly scape, that would be good. Toss it in there on a hot, sunny day like this, a tall drink with some ice and a garlic scape in there could be therapeutic for all I know.
Well, it seems highly possible. It might even be a usable straw.
Well, now there, that's something, actually, that's where you want to use chives.
Chives.
So my daughter, when she was young, that was, and some of her friends, they would take chive hollow stems and sip through those, and even to sipping milk through a chive straw. But again, she also liked to eat her rhubarb raw. So, you know, she had particular tastes, and now that she has a daughter, or granddaughter, we will see what she teaches her.
That's awesome. Yeah, okay, so there's lots of specific harvesting to be done right about now. Here we are, as people are harvesting, what are some ideal things to be planting right now? Like, what does well as we're kind of at pretty close to the peak of daylight hours and temperatures are getting kind of warm? What kind of things should people be planting as they maybe clear a room and a bed?
Sure. So assuming folks are pulling out their old spinach and their radishes, some of the early planted crops, now we can be, hopefully we've already got, I mean, we've been eating lettuce for some time, but planting more crops, more batches of those lettuce, cabbage family crops, starting more broccoli plants. At this point, if you want to plant cabbages, you would probably want to choose some of the early varieties that don't go long to mature, because there are other cabbages which are more the storage types, which take more time. So, and I do not have my crystal ball out here to predict what sort of weather we're going to have late summer and fall, whether we're going to have good ripening, good maturing weather for that. Crops a bit available, but again, planning for some of those too, and there are a lot of different turnips, early and late season, or long maturing turnips are an option. Kale, of course, we've been harvesting madly kale. I just delivered a bunch of it yesterday to one of our local outlets. But kale is always good to, I mean, you can plant that almost any time of the year, it seems like, and it will take off and grow, certainly with the warm.
Yeah, okay. Those are great ideas.
Even at this point, peas are an option. Peas can still be planted. Again, most peas take around 60 days or so. So here we are early July, so early August, early September, for peas to begin to harvest. And then that should last for another month or maybe even 2 months afterwards for a planting this time of year.
Wow. Nice. So you could end up with some good staggering of even your pea crop.
That's right. You know, I'm hoping, I mean, I'm eating a handful out of my greenhouse we planted back in March, but the main crop that's in the ground, I just managed to stick some stuff around them after replanting some of them for the third time, because I was having some little critter pests plucking them out and chewing them up. So that was annoying. So now they've been covered from the remay, and we've got the alder sticks out there, they're grabbing a hold of them and reaching for the sky. So get some support out there for them is important too.
Right, right. Yes, alder sticks, that's a good idea.
And one thing I was just thinking too, you know, if we walk into the greenhouse where it's probably I'm sure it's 100 degrees today. I'm sure mine is. The tomato, we need to be tending tomatoes too, not just, we've talked kind of about tickling the tomatoes to make sure they pollinate, because they don't, all we need to do is kind of bump or shake the plants is enough, or just even with a little stick, just kind of tap on the flower stems. But the other thing to be doing, particularly if we have the indeterminate varieties, which grow tall, grow and grow and grow, up basically as tall as your greenhouse is. I mean, mine are 2 to 3 feet tall and hitting up, is pinching off the side shoots of the those indeterminate tomatoes. We want them to grow tall. We don't want them to be this massive bush with lots and lots of leaves, which can impede air circulation and also restrict the, well, they'll shade the potentially, I hope, ripening fruit, which is forming on those flowers.
Right, okay. So the shade is going to be counterproductive to ripening?
It is. And again, start looking at, I mean, I'm looking at mine where I can see that I planted my potato or tomatoes too thick, you know, too many. I mean, even with new space, more space in the greenhouse, I got more tomatoes, and are, yeah, some of them are definitely too close together. So some may well be sacrificed, unfortunately. But again, think about that and make sure, yeah, make sure your airflow, make sure the air is moving through your greenhouse. It's 100 degrees, it had better be moving, because if it isn't moving, it's cooking. Mm-hmm. So got to keep the air moving, but you've just pinched off the shoots that come right at the base of the leaves from the plant. And you can normally tell they're in between the leaves. There are the flower clusters that come off. So, of course, we don't want to be removing those.
Gotcha. Okay, so when you're doing a little bit of pruning there, you want to be careful not to be unintentionally pruning off your flowers.
And at the same time, that's the perfect time, too, if you have lower leaves which are starting to turn yellow, remove those also. And for all of this, get this stuff out of the greenhouse. We don't want to leave these, you know, a bucket of moldy plant parts in the greenhouse to potentially contaminate if the breeze is blowing through there and the spores might settle on the moist leaves, especially early in the morning, you know, when we've got a lot of condensation in there and then it warms up as it is now and things dry out.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, that actually does remind me of a question I heard earlier this week out while I was out in the real world, outside of the radio station here. Somebody had kind of made the comment that they were seeing less blossom on their tomato plants than they had hoped, or that other years they've had it by this time. And they were wondering about fertilizing their tomatoes. Is there a particular kind of fertilizer they would want to consider using that would be more inducing of flowering and fruiting versus just climbing and climbing forever?
Yes. So, again, for tomatoes, for fruiting crops in general, for flowering and fruiting crops generally, we want a fertilizer which has more phosphorus and potassium, less nitrogen. So initially, when the plants are just starting to grow in the springtime, a bit more nitrogen is good to get the green stuff, get their stems and leaves and all that stuff growing. But then once the plant is beginning to flower or approaching flowering time, you know, and again, you can, you know, you work on your timing for application of some of this. If you have been applying a good rich compost, then you may not have to add much of anything to it. However, if you're looking at your tomato plants and whether there are certainly liquid tomato food, there are powders which you can dissolve, different granular ones. And again, the challenge there is how quickly are they available to the plant if we want to change their conditions. If you look at your tomato plant, it looks rather purplish, you know, really dark purplish green. It tends to be an indicator of low phosphorus. And that's a challenging one to supply in an organic fashion. I mean, you could have own meal with supplies of good phosphorus, but it is slow release stuff to add. And again, some potassium, whether you had some using seaweed. If you have seaweed in your compost, then you should be getting the potassium that the plant needs. So just don't give them a high nitrogen fertilizer. You don't want to stimulate a whole lot of leaves at this point. You want to flowers. So take a look at your vegetable fertilizers that you may have in your shed, in your garage, or wherever, and something with higher middle number, higher second and third number, like a 4, 6, 4, or something like that would be likely to be some a sort of an organic fertilizer. And make sure when you, if you apply, whether you're scratching them some around the plant or sprinkling it on the surface, that you water. Make sure the plant is a little moist to start with, and then water, kind of water it in so it can help dissolve. Moisture is needed so that the plant can extract nutrients from the fertilizer.
Okay, and I suppose that same sort of consideration about the numbers and the ratio, basically lower nitrogen, same thing you'd want to use for something like cucumbers, squashes, peas, things that are fruiting and flowering right now versus putting up leaves?
Yes, exactly. So, yeah, so you might use a different fertilizer on your cabbages and cauliflower, on lettuce and Swiss chard, you know, kale, that sort of stuff that is mostly green stuff. Those can take a bit more nitrogen on those. And even though I hate to mention it, we'll throw lawns in there anyway if we're talking about fertilizer, then normally lawn fertilizer, especially summer lawn fertilizer, is normally a high nitrogen, often a numbers like 25, 5, or something like that. And again, when you, if you think, oh, it's a beautiful, beautiful weather, I can go out and fertilize my lawn, well, if you do that when it's hot and dry like this, you really, really need to make sure you water it afterwards to wash it down so the granules don't sit on the leaves. They can burn the leaves, and that way, again, the watering it down helps get it down to the roots where it belongs so the plants can use it.
Gotcha.
And again, this is a good place where if you're making, you know, if you're making the wheat juice tea or something like that, that's a good one. That's something that you can add that you can water your plants with. Again, if it's been fermenting in those slimy buckets out back, that's a good one to use because it is, that is a fertilizer which is quickly available to the plants because they're, you know, the plant parts have been broken down pretty well.
Okay, yeah, right. So that's what I've got going. I've got a bucket of, you know, kind of my compost weed juice bucket there on the back porch. Is there, if I wanted to kind of influence the ratio of, you know, the chemical in there, do you ever, like, spike that with something that's more potassium heavy than nitrogen, or do you just kind of let that be what it is?
Yeah, well, I mean, essentially this is kind of like a liquid compost that you're kind of using, or if you're taking compost that you've already made, in particular, you can add, again, this is kind of, you should have done this some time ago kind of thing. But to your compost, if you're making compost, you can actually add bone meal or rock phosphate or even a little bit of wood ashes. And certainly if you're adding seaweed, you know, seaweed and wood ashes have potassium in it. The rock phosphate or bone meal have more phosphorus in them. So again, that could go in the compost, and during the composting process, the various bacteria and fungi and other stuff help break that material down into forms which is more readily available to plant. So then if you take that good compost that you've made, then take that to make your juice, your liquid, again, then you get more of a supplemental effect by it, using it at that point.
Gotcha.
And again, you might look, even if you're looking at bags of, you know, bag compost, you might have chicken manure particularly. And usually those will say, they'll have a few, some numbers on them. The numbers aren't going to be real large, but for something like chicken manure, maybe 3-2-2 or something similar, where steer manure is going to be very low. Usually it's more like 1-1-1 or even lower. So that chicken manure would be a better boost for tomatoes. And for one more reason, too, I don't know if folks have seen or had a problem with it in the past, a calcium deficiency in tomatoes is seen on the fruits by something that's sometimes called blossom end rot, or if you look at the bottom of the tomato as it's growing and ripening, you'll see this kind of a dry, yellowish-brown patch of skin. It's tough on the bottom of the tomato, and that's that again, that is telling you that there should be more calcium in the soil, in the fertilizer, or in the supplement that you might be given. So again, the rock phosphate and the bone meal both have calcium in them. Wood ashes, likewise, there's a lot of calcium in that too. So it's beneficial for the plants and the fruits that are forming.
Okay, nice. Sounds like that's a kind of a multiple benefit of doing that particular kind of fertilizing right now.
It is. It is. Yeah, and so again, we add some water, and hopefully the warm weather continues. Again, warm weather helps stimulate the, having warmer soil, stimulates the little critters, the bacteria, the fungi, and other stuff to do their work more quickly compared to cold, wet soil. So again, whatever we can do to warm the soil is beneficial to our soil microflora and the plants growing out of it.
Okay. Well, speaking of little critters, maybe as a closing topic here for the show today, is there anything that you want to have people be particularly alert to as far as warmer weather, mid-season pest maintenance in the garden?
Yeah. Sir, I mean, last week I saw a new pest to me I've never seen before. This lady has some climbing roses up against her house. She commented, well, you know, they've got these brown patches on the rose leaves. And I went over to look at them and turned the leaf over. Little critters were hiding out underneath there. These are some little green kind of flattened caterpillars. And they're small ones, quarter inch long at most. Those are the biggest ones. But they had been, you can see where they, with their mouth parts, had been scraping away the top green surface of the leaf, almost kind of leaving, almost looked like little windows, sort of. They weren't holes. They were just scraping off the top layer of cells. I suppose that was the more tender and tasty part. So, again, that, to go along with a lot of our other pests that we might see that are on the surface of leaves, at least, I recommend a soap spray to her, to you. Just our standby, a tablespoon of liquid soap and a quart of water, and you've got to spray it on the bugs. So whether you have the on the currants and gooseberries, the currant worms, or if you've got aphids, which are building up their numbers, and other stuff, that's something to watch for and to use. It's cheap, it's safe. And we can eat after we rinse the stuff off sometime later. We can eat the plant.
Okay, and so that recipe, again, is one tablespoon?
Yes, of soap in a quart of water. You know, you got a little spray bottle. If you want to add a little extra flavor to it, you can add some Tabasco sauce, maybe the same of that. And that might actually work somewhat as a bit of repellent, where with the soap itself, is the active ingredient that we want to spray on the bugs, and it literally dehydrates the little insects of whatever sort that we're spraying it on.
Gotcha. So that's maybe just a smart thing to have in your spray bottle at the ready. I like the idea of spiking it with a little bit of pepper spray there, a Tabasco dash in there, and just be ready to spray that on the leaves when you've got unwanted airborne diners on your leaves.
And you may want to do a little test spray first on a few, and particularly be careful with, certainly I've seen stuff on aphids and other critters on potatoes and also on lettuce. Both of those have rather tender skin, tender leaves. So, again, we might want to just do a light spray and give that a few hours or even overnight to sit on to see how the leaves react. So if the soap is too strong, then we may have some falling of the leaves. And then we're kind of defeating the purpose, killing the pest, but then if we're killing or damaging the leaves, we're still losing the battle.
Okay, good. Good secondary consideration there, for sure. And so which plants would you describe as a little more potentially sensitive to that soap spray?
Well, lettuce. Lettuce is pretty tender, and potatoes, potato plants. Again, I've seen aphids on the glowing tips occasion in the past, or on the undersides of the leaves. And again, usually it's the newer growth tends to have that rather than the older growth. The older stuff is tougher, and you don't like it as much. That makes sense. So again, just be careful when you spray. If you're spraying on, if you've got worms or other stuff on cabbage family crops, usually there they've got such waxy leaves that just rolls right off. Doesn't harm them much.
Gotcha. Okay. Okay. Well, I think that's a good tip to leave people with, equipped to just keep things going good and strong in the garden for the next week. And we'll leave it there, and we'll talk to you again this time next week, Ed.
All right, Gregor Dern. Let's hope this stuff is supposed to last for a while. So enjoy the sun, stay hydrated, and pull some more weeds because they like the sun too.
Yes, indeed. Okay, good advice. I hope you have a great holiday, Ed, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right. Thanks, Dern.
Okay. Till then, thank you too. All right. In the Garden with Ed Bajarski. Always good advice. Leaves us with a lot of homework for the gardens, but well worth doing. You know, it's a healthy way to spend time outside, and there's no upper limit. Keep on doing it. And we want to say thank you to the Flower Farm for helping underwrite In the Garden. They're out there at 6 Rory's Road, Papke's Landing. Every day but Wednesday, 10 to 4, and they offer free delivery in the evenings. 772-3464. They've got bouquets available by the jar or subscription with dahlias, snaps, and more. That's the Flower Farm. Stay tuned. Up next, high country music, DJed by Alec McMurrin. Then at 4 o'clock, it's All Things Considered. Your local news at 4:30. Statewide news at 6 o'clock. And then It's Classic is hosted by Matt Lenhard tonight. Music for America's Independence Day. TED Radio Hour after that. Topic is Big Ideas for All. Then Radio Free Petersburg is hosted by Chris Weiss tonight from 10 till midnight. Then you get your world news overnight from the BBC World Service. So, great day of radio coming your way. Thank you so much for listening.